Good morning. My name is Quinn Gentry, and this morning I'll be presenting on the topic of You've Gotta Have Faith. It's an ethnographic study that's underway amongst faith-based workers' influence on adolescent sexual health. And as I talk through the process, basically I'm going to focus on methods and practices this morning because I think that that's really important as it relates to year one of our study. We are funded by the National Institute of Health, the National Center on Minority Health and Health Disparities, where we were able to get an exploratory R21 to do this work. Other than that, we have no relationships to disclose. I'd like to acknowledge the co-PIs for this project, Dr. Blum of Johns Hopkins Public Health, and Reverend Hickman, who is in the faith community. She runs STAR. These are the additional individuals who contributed to the project as well. So the faith study is designed to do three things. First, we developed a conceptual framework that we want to test to better understand the influence that youth ministries have on young people's behaviors. One of the things that we think makes this project innovative is the opportunity to really engage the youth ministries in research, whereas other individuals coming from the public health research perspective constantly go and talk to pastors, and we thought that we would include youth ministers in the process. The second thing we wanted to do was to test a model for how we would use epidemiological data to actually tell us where to focus our ethnographic study. So using those two methodologies together. And then finally, there is a community-based participatory research methodology where we're using traditional community-based participatory research methods, but also our knowledge of how to engage from a cultural sensitivity standpoint, how to engage the faith community differently, and some of the things we have to do that work in community-based participatory research that are not easily translated into a faith-based setting. So first, let's talk about the conceptual framework. What we wanted to, in framing our research project, we wanted to know what is the research, the study is called the FAITH study, and I have to say that the FAITH is an acronym for Faith-Based Adolescents Involved in Total Health. And that's one of the things we had to talk about differently in terms of the faith community, even though we know that we're trying to deconstruct what's happening around sexual health. We knew that we could not take it into the faith community saying as much. We learned all of our lessons in HIV prevention and intervention. And so we called it total health because we know that that most of the faith-based communities that we were working with were about the total education of young people. So they helped us to come up with this acronym, and it really works. So in that sense, then, the faith-based the faith study is designed to help public health researchers and advocates better understand the influence of youth ministries on adolescent development. And so when we talk to the faith community, we said we're going to do two things. We're going to first try to design something that is relevant to the young people, but at the same time, we don't want to just dump public health jargon into the faith community. We want to be really respectful as it relates to designing a health intervention that is sensitive to what the church's mission and doctrine is all about. So with that, the first thing we had to do in terms of the public health community is we had to say to them, this is why the faith community matters. This is why you can't push past them with the goals and objectives that you have. So we talked to them about the fact that the faith-based faith-based organizations still remain as a trusted institution in the black community, that faith leaders, despite some of the things that have happened in the media where those of us who are not engaged in the faith community would only hear these sound bites, the truth of the matter is faith-based leaders continue to serve as important messengers on political and social issues as it relates to getting the black community involved. And then finally, we looked in the literature and found some collaborative partnerships between the faith community and public health institutions that have improved over time. We looked in as benchmarks, we looked at heart disease, cancer, diabetes, and weight-related issues. But then we also started to look at the ways in which the faith communities at different times and under different circumstances had opened up to be more open to addressing adolescent sexual health. And we actually found five distinct areas. Some were engaged only in information sharing that come in one time. And then other churches said, well, we'll use scare straight tactics. You can come in and give them the fears about why they should not be having sex. And then there were others that had abstinence only programs, virginity pledges and rites of passage programs. And there were a few who were all already doing abstinence plus medically accurate information about reproduction, contraception, protection, and infection. So just a pocket of churches were involved in a comprehensive sexual education approach. And then when we went to the faith community, we said, this is why you should work with public health. Technically, all adolescents are at risk, and they're actually open to this now with social media being out of control. And one youth minister said, you know, I can't even preach a sermon in youth church anymore without seeing all the little thumbs going. So he said, if you can't feed them, join them. And he said, everybody take out some form. If you got a cell phone, if you got a Facebook, whatever you're doing. And he said, and I want you to text out and send out everything I'm saying. And true to form, he said the next Sunday that every last one of them brought at least one person that they had been corresponding to during the service. So, you know, again, if you can't beat them, join them. So you can take, technically, you can take all adolescents at risk and turn them into church-going children. So, and then the other thing is they talked about the fact that the parents are saying, we have tried so hard to raise PG children, but they live in an X-rated world, and we don't even know how to begin to talk about these things. So the point is that we looked at, we listened to the faith community, and we heard parents and youth ministers crying out. And these are the conversations that you won't get if you're just trying to engage the pastor. Number one, now we figured this out too. Just as an ethnographer in watching the goings and comings of the children, it's not the pastor's fault that he doesn't know what's really going on. Those children know how to code switch. They get in children's church and cut up as soon as the pastor comes by, hey, Reverend Johnson, and they look so sweet and innocent. So he doesn't know that all of this X-rated stuff is going on because they know, and just like with the principal, come on, think about what the teachers know versus what the principal really knows. So that same kind of thing is happening in church. We also recognize that in terms of clothing and activities, there's a disappearance from pre-adolescent. Children are going from being 10 years old to being 20 years old. And so pre-adolescence as a time when you had a breather to sort of begin to think about how you're going to introduce sex and sexuality, you don't have that time anymore because all of the activities, the television shows, their aspirations, the hip girls, the cultural nuances, media, their peers, everybody is advancing them past that guarded stage of pre-adolescent. And then the mainstreaming of teen motherhood. It's not a shame and stigma anymore. And they have television shows showing you how this is done, how this is just fabulous. And it's their reality. There's still a need for faith-based health initiatives for young men of color. And the sixth point was that young people are leaving the church not adequately prepared for life's challenges. So a lot of the ministers in our formative process talked about the fact that you think you got them right where you want them to be. They've been good kids all the way through Sunday school and, 13 and 14 and 16 and 17. And you send them off to college and they come back freshman year pregnant or with some kind of hush-hush stigma or disease going on. And it's because we have not adequately prepared them for life outside of the church. So the seventh thing was that youth ministries are ill-equipped to address the current array of issues that are presented by teenagers and their families. Again, things that a lot of the parents will talk to youth ministers about and subjects and that never reached a pastor. So it was very important that we engage the youth ministry leaders and workers in conversations about what do you need and what are the key points that we can address to help you to build capacity. And some of the things they talked about is that it's overwhelming, that youth ministry staffs are burning out, and that even when you have excited youth ministry volunteers, they just simply don't have the knowledge or capacity to address the complex social and psychological issues faced by today's teen. So much so that as a professor of sociology, my pastor hired me to teach the youth ministers sociology and psychology just the same way I would teach for adolescent youth development, just the same way I would teach it at a university, and then how they would apply those same principles in a faith-based setting. That's just how complex the social and psychological issues are that young people are bringing into the faith environment. Number eight, faith communities touch on key aspects of adolescent health, but they're primarily working with girls, as they revealed. They do want to learn how to work with boys, but they're simply working with girls. And they first start on spiritual well-being. We saw a lot of people doing some physical health things, like the dance teams and the step teams, mental health and coping, and social and peer relations. And when we started to talk about sexual decision making, they weren't sure that they were talking about sexual decision making as much as they were talking about don't make any decisions about sex as the key point. And then finally, the faith community did talk about that they needed to be part of the research and development process to create more relevant health education products for a faith-based setting. And the point that they were making is that they are tired of the public health researchers developing evidence-based projects and then slapping an adaptation for the faith community. And they wanted something that was authentically theirs from the beginning, that it was designed for the faith community, with the faith community involved from the beginning. Hence the co-PIs. You have one from the public health community, and you have one from the faith community working. They've been together since day one of this grant. It wasn't like one was established and then we had this series of meetings or the project started moving out. They were proposed as co-PIs. They kicked off the meetings together and they've been working together for the first 18 months of the study. So that in and of itself is new news for the ways in which public health and the faith community can partner together. So then we had to lay out some conceptual framework to test. NIH would not allow us to get out of the box without showing them conceptually what that this innovative process looked like. So we still know that the faith leader is relevant. He had to be a part of, or she has to be a part of this process. And I say she because we have an advisory board that is 50-50. Five of the ministers are female and five are males. And then churches at different levels have different faith ministries, but what we learned is that we can reasonably say that they cover all or some of these different components as it relates to youth ministry. So these arrows just point to the levels of influence, and I could spend the next 20 minutes unpacking this, but I just want to sort of open it in a conceptual framework, and that is what we know is that there's a diverse group of young people that come to church that programs need to be planned for in terms of age, gender, and the biggest one, according to the youth ministers, is the level of religious attachment. You know, there's the I'm committed because this was my decision, or I'm uncompliant because I was made to come here. Been in both camps personally, but. And then the level of sexual risk behavior. We also are looking at the level of caregiver involvement and just who they live with in the first place. And then we look at this whole external environment for two reasons. Number one, the young people in the church actually interact with folks in the external environment, or peers in the external environment. But at the same time, the faith leaders talked about the fact that they want to use this project to learn how to engage those young people who live in the community but do not attend the church. So that's why we put the external environment influences and influencers on adolescent development. So how will research, is being conducted at this point? The faith study is being implemented in six phases. The first two phases are about 100% complete, and we are moving into phase three right now. But what we did first, we used epidemiological data. We identified communities for teen pregnancy in Baltimore, as well as their related socioeconomic indicators. We also, in phase two then, chose churches who are located in those areas to be a part of the advisory board. And then in phase three, we wanted to do a broad, rapid survey way to understand those. Like, everybody can't be a part of ethnography. Ethnographies are smaller sample sizes, more case study centered, where you go deeper and get a richer understanding. But we thought it was also important to include at least a rapid survey to understand what a broad range of pastors and youth ministers had to say about working with adolescents in health education. And then phase four is about convening and engaging a faith advisory board. And phase five is the ethnographic research phase, where we actually have extended the, just last week, all the churches signed on to, all 10 churches signed on with MOAs that we can now submit to IRB saying we have the 10 churches who will be a part of the ethnographic. And then in phase six, we promised them, because of the things that they said that they wanted to learn, that it is now a part of the research design, not a nice thing to do, but a must do, because we are. It was written into the methodology that we would conduct a debrief and share the data and do some initial capacity building and technical assistance on how they can use their knowledge of the needs that are unraveled in the ethnographic research process to begin immediately addressing some of those needs. Because again, that's where there's tension between the faith community and the public health community. When faith community finds out there's a problem, they want to start working on it right now. The public health says, let's study it again and again and again and again and again, and the problem just continues to, you know, get worse while we look at it and we say, oh my gosh, this problem is really, really bad. Wasn't that bad if you had addressed it when we were at an earlier stage. So this is just the findings from phase one. These are the if you see those little dots, that is actually where churches signed up to be a part of the ethnographic study. So what we're showing is that we selected the 10 worst neighborhoods. We wanted to make sure that for political reasons, we chose churches only in those neighborhoods, because some of the more popular churches and pastors are actually outside of the where the epidemiological data say we should be working. So we the co-PIs worked together to make sure that those churches that were invited were in those neighborhoods that were most impacted by teen pregnancy. And then for each of these neighborhoods, so we didn't want to just look at teen pregnancy and start the beginnings of making this an individual problem, right? So for every one of those 10 neighborhoods, we had to focus on the sexual health risk factors, but we also pulled the demographic data and we looked at the socioeconomic context, i.e. the social determinants of health, and we also looked at violence, neglect, and abuse. We didn't just want to leave these girls out there vulnerable, because we know that in America, teen pregnancy has been framed as a girl's problem. And so in looking at the level of violence, neglect, and abuse, we can also start to talk about what are those issues that result in teen girls becoming pregnant. And then finally, we made a list of all the faith-based communities that are located in those particular neighborhoods as a first step in trying to understand the current state of adolescent programming, the extent to which sexual health is addressed, and the extent to which they are ready to address those unmet health needs, especially around teen pregnancy prevention. So then in phase three, this is where we brought the faith-based advisory board together. We first invited 20 pastors from those churches in the 10 communities with the worst outcomes for teen pregnancy. 10 of those pastors accepted and signed those MOUs for us to come into their church and to do a more rich and ethnographic study. Three convenings have taken place to date as a way to give these faith-based advisory board a place to give us authentic voice in terms of guidelines for how this study is going to move as we move forward. And then finally, the next step, just last week we met and explained how we want to engage the youth ministry leaders and young people in the study. Can't believe that. Okay. So with that, this is just the talking points we use to get the faith-based advisory board on board. More of the talking points. This is the survey. The survey was divided into two parts, but I really want to go to the ethnographic phase. So this is how the phase that we're about to go into in January. In-depth interviews will be conducted with every pastor and every youth minister, because we want to be able to feed them back that here's what your youth minister is thinking, here's what the pastor is thinking, and if you're going to do this whole faith-based approach to adolescent health, you two as leaders need to first come together and sort of figure out how you're going to move forward and how you're going to sort of handle challenges. And then the focus groups to understand what the youth perspective, parental perspectives, but also those youth ministry leaders' needs. Then there's an observation form, because we know we can't just send a lot of public health folks who don't have a faith-based sensitivity into a church setting. In other words, I guess for me, that becomes a protective factor. I grew up in the black church, and I just cannot have people who do not understand what that's all about writing notes that become a part of public health entity. So I gave them a form. Well, I just revealed I wrote this form, right? So I developed this form because it's really important that they know that you just can't write your personal journal and your personal aha moments. You can do that on your personal time, but what will become science is very important in terms of how people looking at this study 10 years from now will view the black church in particular. And these just are the themes that we're going to compare in the ethnographic phase. So my minutes are up, but I want to say that one of the things, this is a slower process, one that a lot of public health researchers don't appreciate. It goes a lot slower, but in the end, I think that it will be a better study, because we will have the faith-based community fully committed to the process and engaged. And when something happens on the back end in terms of results and implications, they will be better. They will receive them differently, because they will have seen themselves throughout the process, and not, we met with you, we're going to go away, do this whole study, and come back and share with you the findings. We meet twice a week. I mean, you know I'm in Baltimore, like twice. I got to go Thursday for this project, because we want to make sure that we stay in the churches and on the ground and keep them fully abreast of all the research. It takes a lot longer, but we believe that it's going to be the best, one of the best practices in the long run. Thank you.